Welcome to the podcast that is all about self-employment. We'll be sharing expertise on getting started, getting noticed, and getting it right, as well as dealing with getting it wrong. Your host, Julia Kermode, will help you get ahead so you get the success you deserve.
Welcome to today's podcast. I'm delighted to have with me Amanda Davis, and we're going to talk about marketing, following on from our last marketing episode with Christina Robinson. And we're going to specifically talk today about how to get started in social media and a little bit about Amanda. She's worked in marketing for probably more years than she'd like me to say, and she works freelance at the moment for herself, and also she does some work for Green Umbrella on that freelance basis. And Green Umbrella is owned by Christina, who we spoke to last week. So really warm welcome, Amanda. Have I done your intro justice? Is there anything you want to add?
No, absolutely, more than justice. Delighted to be here. You're right, it is probably more years than I would care to mention. But it feels like, because so much changes, there's still lots of things that are new in the marketing industry. So, but yes, a couple of decades in I am now.
So, big question to start with. If someone is totally new to social media, and of course our audience are probably self-employed people who are just starting out, probably just set up for whatever reason. So say someone is totally new to social media, how do they start? What would you suggest? And I know that's a massive question, but we've got to start somewhere, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody's got to start somewhere. And as much as we all kind of assume, well, everyone's on Facebook or everybody uses social media, it's not always the case. You know, people sometimes, you know, if they're moving out of an employed world or they're in a role that maybe requires them to be a bit anonymous. So I've worked with people in the past who are maybe therapists, they work in sort of child protection or social services. So they specifically want to stay away. They don't want to be able to be tracked down. You know, so for kind of well-being and safeguarding, it is quite common that people, you know, they stay away, or they might go on social media under a slightly different name. They might use a nickname. So it's difficult to track them down. People starting out, where do they start? As you say, it's tricky. It's kind of tricky at the moment because you can't go and sit next to somebody to train you either. You know, and a lot of these things are phone based, they're app based. So my advice would be, if you're completely starting out, one, ask your family. So the people that you're kind of in lockdown with, particularly if you have teenage children, if you've got access to maybe like nieces, nephews, anybody that you are spending time with, they will be able to give you the benefits. These people are kind of tech wizards, scarily so. But to start with, set up your accounts and maybe just lurk for a bit. Don't feel the pressure to post or interact, but you can kind of just quietly sit in the background and kind of get the hang of the sort of content people are posting, the sort of language they use. How do you add links, you know, so really just kind of getting the structure of, okay, how does it work before I kind of dive in?
I love what you're saying about lurking, by the way. I have to confess, I am currently lurking on Instagram. So I've got a work account and I've got my own account, and my own account is there, but my own account is not quite sure what to do. so I am a lurker. And I'm also quite late to the Facebook part of social media, because I actively avoided it for years, and I've got to the point where actually I can't avoid it any longer, so may as well just get on with it. But I do have sympathy with our listeners who may be looking at it for the first time. And one of the things actually about looking at it for the first time, some people might have had a personal account that they've had all sorts of stuff on for them personally. How do they kind of transition from these funny, hilarious posts in amongst them and their friends to maybe something more business-like? Do they need a separate business account, or what would you suggest?
Yeah, absolutely. It's and from a personal point of view, I like to keep it separate too. So like you, I've kind of got a worky profile, and I've got my personal stuff. Not because I'm out, you know, sort of having riotous parties and, you know, living a wild life, you know, I wish. But kind of on my personal stuff, I think work people won't necessarily want to see pictures of my dog or, you know, the sports I'm into and things like that. So the work stuff I keep for marketing. So so yes, it is good to separate. Facebook is a great example. If you are starting your business, you would create what's called a page. So, you know, for a personal point of view, we have our personal profile. Aside from that, there are two things you can create from a business point of view. One is a page, one is a group. So a group is more like a community where people will sort of share and dive in. So it could be you created a community for local marketers, for example. So I might, you know, start on kind of London marketers or Hampshire marketers. Or it could be something as basic as, you know, if you're a tradesperson, it might be kind of, you know, electricians in Hampshire or a community where people can kind of ask questions. So that's quite interactive. You don't really have a chance to moderate too much. A page is almost like a mini website in a way. It's your kind of brochure for your website. You control the content. You post on a regular basis. People, you know, people can comment. But you have a bit more control over whether you want people to comment, whether you want to moderate those comments, first of all. So, if you're starting out, we're focusing quite a bit on Facebook. Obviously, there are plenty of other social channels. Yeah. You can create multiple Twitter handles. You can create multiple Instagram accounts. Mm. And if you are using these on your phone, it is quite easy to switch between them. But I would say you just have to be a little bit careful because occasionally you might accidentally post from one profile to another. So
I'm laughing. I'm only laughing because I have a couple of Twitter accounts. So I have I have my work one, but you mentioned dogs. My dogs have their own Twitter account as well. And I am so worried that one day I will post one of my dog's posts onto my own professional one. So always be careful if you are doing multiple accounts. But I think if I was completely new to Twitter, I perhaps would keep multiple accounts for kind of later once I felt more comfortable, hence me lurking on Instagram. But on the subject of Facebook then, I heard that Facebook is one of the is almost used like a search engine, a bit like Google. And I heard that some businesses have just a Facebook page and don't even bother with a website. Is that something that you've seen anything of, and what are your thoughts around that?
It is something I've seen, and it's really common, and particularly for I guess micro businesses. So, you know, if you are, you know, very niche or just starting out, so I'm thinking maybe, you know, so we said local tradespeople, beauty
really
salons,
that.
That kind of thing. It's free for a start, so there's absolutely no cost to it. And it's a great way because, you know, Facebook is the biggest social media platform. Well, there's a slight caveat in that YouTube is technically classed as a social media channel, but it's not one that we traditionally think of as social media. But it is classed as that. So obviously there's lots of video content on there. So Facebook is kind of the biggest of the, I suppose, what we would call the traditional social channel. So everyone's on there. People use it to find local information. It's great to kind of get referrals. So it's perfectly acceptable. It's a great way of starting out. And if it's just you in a business, let's face it, sometimes you need to get the balance of time right between working, you know, actually doing the stuff that earns you money. And delivering what it is you do, whether that is baking cakes, doing beauty treatments or fixing boilers. versus doing the marketing. So, you know, you can create websites cheaply and quite straightforwardly in things like, you know, one-on-one websites, GoDaddy, WordPress, that kind of thing. So they are low cost and good value. But yeah, it's perfectly fine to just start off with a Facebook page, you know, and you start to gather on that recommendations, and people will see your comments. It almost feels a bit more authentic, a bit more real. Yeah. So, because you can, you know, if I was a prospective customer, I might head to the Facebook page, look down, and I can see other people have commented going, oh, you know, fantastic service. Thanks so much. I'm so grateful you came at a moment's notice. So it kind of feels, yeah, almost a bit more independent than a website, which is like a brochure.
Yeah, yeah, I'm nodding along, which is obviously brilliant for a podcast. But yeah, that makes perfect sense. And you know, I think getting that interaction with your customers is really important and really does give that credibility. Whereas a website, you can put testimonials on your own website, but there's no guarantee that they're real, is there?
So yeah,
completely get what you're saying there. So it sounds like Facebook might be really good for some types of businesses, but maybe not all types of businesses. Are there different kind of channels that are suitable for different businesses? I realise that's a very broad question, have you got any thoughts on it?
Yes, and you're right. There are multiple options people can look at. It can feel a bit overwhelming, maybe, kind of, well, where do I go first? Which one, where should I kind of hang out and spend my time? As I said, so Facebook and YouTube are the biggest. YouTube is owned by Google and it is a big search engine, so you know, if you are you know, if you like creating videos, and we can, it's quite easy to do them on our phones these days. You know, at the moment people are quite kind of self-serve is one of the phrases. So if we want to find out how to do something, like how do I rewire a plug? How do I dye my hair at home? Something like that. So we will often go on and we'll find videos and get tips of how to do it. So that's why YouTube is so big in a way. So it's a mixture of these self-serve videos and, you know, clips of celebrities, etc.
I guess that really took off last year when in kind of the first lockdowns, because I guess people didn't have access to the outside world as much. And I think I heard of people learning new hobbies and that sort of thing online. I mean, I personally didn't have time, so I didn't get a chance to. But yeah, I'm sure people were learning new languages or musical instruments or whatever. YouTube is massive, isn't it?
It is. And it's perfect for that kind of thing, as you say. So even, you know, if you wanted to build a website, for example, you could go onto YouTube and say, how do I do this in WordPress? How do I create a post in whatever? So, and it sort of shows you a screen record of someone doing it. So it is fantastic for that. And that's why people spend so much time on there. And as I say, it's a big search engine, so it's indexed. So if you put content on there, if you did have a website, you would appear higher up in the search engine rankings. So but it's not for everyone. Some people, if they are providing maybe more of a service that isn't visual, you can't create videos of. You might look at other channels. Sometimes it can be personal preference. You do obviously need to think about who am I targeting. So this is kind of a big question. I'm sure it came up probably with Christina.
So does some of it depend on where your audience is and the type of social media that they're using?
Totally. And I'm sure this would have come up perhaps with Christina in the last marketing podcast. Target audience is a really big thing, because we often think about, well, where do I like to hang out and spend time? What messages would appeal to me? But if your target audience isn't you, perhaps, you know, so again, I don't know why I keep sort of reverting back to tradespeople, but you know, they, I think a lot of people have struggled over the last year, but we need these services. So if you were, you know, plumber, electrician, something like that, your audience is likely to be, you know, it could be women, it could be home, you know, sort of mums, that kind of thing. So it might be slightly different if you're a kind of younger guy, that, you know, there's a bit of a mismatch. So you really need to think about, okay, who's my target audience? I always have kind of in my mind you know, thinking about diversity and inclusivity here, because whilst you want to really narrow down on who your target is, try not to be too stereotypical with it as well.
I agree.
You know, you want to make sure that you are inclusive and people who have different needs, whether it's accessibility, whether their cultural background is different, you know, make sure you're kind of appealing to that. But yeah, in terms of demographic, if you're kind of a professional services, if you're looking at targeting kind of mid-level, senior level professionals, LinkedIn is obviously a great place to hang out and to build your network. If, again, you're more of a visual, so you're, maybe it's consumer products that you're developing, you know, in the run-up to Christmas, for example, or interior design, things like Pinterest and Instagram are perfect for that. You know, the demographic there tends to be slightly more female heavy. And it was sort of maybe sort of 20, 25 and under, but that has started to come up now. So
that's because I'm lurking on Instagram. I've brought the average age up.
Well, no, I'm a convert to Instagram. I love it now, and I love the stories as well. So you know, you might have noticed that in nearly all channels, so LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, they're all doing it. You have your main news feed where you put a post; it stays there all the time. But then you also have content which is it's called stories in Facebook and Instagram. It's called Fleets in Twitter. I think it's just still Stories in LinkedIn. The name escapes me, but it's content that is only there for 24 hours, basically. So it's very short, snappy content.
I wanted to ask you that just from a selfish perspective, because I just don't get it. So I have not done anything on stories or anything. And by the way, the purpose of this chat isn't to give me loads of free advice. But I'm just thinking, if I've got questions, probably our listeners will have similar ones. So what is the point of that? I just don't get it.
So the point of it, I suppose, let's move sort of around the point of it to go to the popularity of it, first of all. So
okay, perfect,
So at the moment, there's something like 500 million daily active users on stories.
Wow, so okay.
It is popular content. It's easily digestible.
Yeah.
And I think we've all moved away from, or starting to move away, because in our news feeds, they often get cluttered up. And, you know, I could alienate some of my friends by saying this, but we've all got those people in our network that post a picture of their dinner, a gazillion pictures of their children or their dog in our case. And, you know, and let's face it, the news in the world isn't that positive. So sometimes, even if we're not following news channels, our news feed can get full of stuff like that. Whereas the stories tends to be a little bit more lighthearted. You can, you literally just kind of use your thumb to tap through it.
Right.
It's not there forever as well. So actually, stories is quite a nice way of getting started. So if you're not too sure about putting a post that's going to stay there forever, 24 hours and it's gone.
Okay. So you can practice and see what people like or engage with a bit. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's a nice way as well if you're a little nervous about doing video, maybe. So you can have a
video.
Yeah, exactly. We all feel a bit self-conscious to start with. But it's a great way to try that, because you can record a little video, you know, even ask people's opinion, kind of, you know. So if you're talking,
that's a brave move.
Before we started the podcast, we were talking about kind of, you know, Zoom backgrounds and things.
Yes.
But it's a great way of building some interaction, asking opinions, getting that engaging content. And it's a good way of building. So from a marketing point of view, if we go way back to kind of the psychology of marketing, it often starts with building that kind of know, like and trust factor. So you have to get to know somebody, start to like them a bit and trust them before you will even think about committing to working with them. You know, stories is quite a nice way of doing that. It's quite easy content. And that's probably one of the biggest changes that we've seen, but it's not going anywhere.
So may as well get on with it.
Kind of,
Okay, fine. And that whole know, like and trust thing, I think is massively important, especially, I don't know if you think it's got more important, but I just think that with everyone being home-based to a large extent for the last year because of the pandemic, then I imagine that online know, like and trust is even more important than it ever has been. Great.
Definitely. So, you know, people want to build that factor. If you think now and I think even when we come out of lockdown, you know, if it's somebody who is providing at-home services, you need to be confident about them coming into your home. You can't, or if it's somebody that's professional services, you can only meet them over a Zoom at the moment, or a video call. other platforms are available.
Surely not.
But yeah, so it is important to build that factor. And I think a lot of people, if they don't have that marketing background, they often jump straight to the buy now, click here, do this.
Mm.
Whereas they haven't done any of that kind of top of the funnel awareness.
Yeah.
No, like and trust.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah. No, that's so true. And I guess also the whole no, like and trust thing is built around being authentic online. So, if you whatever your personality is and how do you want to come across? If you write quite formally and you come across quite formally on an inappropriate social media like Facebook, then it's probably not going to work because the audience there will think, oh, why is there this report writer on here or whatever. Ooh. Kind of, I don't know, you tell me whether you need to adapt your style to suit social media, but you also need to be authentic and true to yourself, don't you?
Yes. Yeah, totally. The authenticity can be a bit of an overused word, okay. But it's so relevant. Mm. It really is. And people want to see that coming through. You know, as I said, especially in the last year or so, consumers want to see brands that are picking up on kind of the sentiment of what's going on. Mm. So, you know, whether it is COVID lockdown, whether it's events that have happened in the States, whether it's some of the, you know, some of the stuff around racism and the Black Lives Matter movement.
Mm.
You know, we've possibly all heard of high profile events that maybe a big corporate has got wrong. You know, they put a post out and they've pitched it all wrong.
Yeah.
And they've had to make an apology and say, yeah, we kind of got the tone wrong. So what we as consumers want to see is people kind of picking up on the mood of the nation.
Yeah.
And, you know, putting that out there in the right way. So you're absolutely right, kind of being true to yourself. But if it's a cause that doesn't matter to you, or is let your, or I say doesn't matter to you, is less relevant to you.
Mm.
So, you know, if I started, you know, really posting about events that were happening with the storming of the White House, whilst it's kind of, you know, it's an important event, it's less relevant to me and my audience, and people will be like, why is she doing that?
Yeah.
And then I'll never speak about it again. So, you know, make sure it's authentic to you, or if you're putting it out there, talk about why it matters, why it's important to you.
Okay. Yeah. And that makes sense. So, and you know, what I'm thinking about is when before I had like my own Facebook page and that sort of thing, sometimes I would want to comment on stuff that like sporting stuff that's going on over the weekend, but it didn't match my professional sort of persona. So I never did, but now I've got kind of my own personal social media as well. It's great, it's free. I can be a bit truer to myself, whereas it didn't suit that professional audience. So I think that's so true, isn't it?
I was just gonna say on that point of view though, because we talk about keeping it separate, with the authenticity piece and thinking about content that engages your audience. You know, again, people, as I say, people want to see the real you behind it.
Mm.
So, you know, when I'm talking to clients or people I work with about creating content, we'll have kind of core sales messages about what you do. But then, yes, there will be things in there that are about, you know, major sporting events that might be happening.
Mm.
You know, so the rugby, for example, the Six Nations is starting soon. So people might talk about that.
Yeah.
There is supposed to be, hopefully, the Olympics later this year that got postponed.
Yes.
So if you're into that and you put that out there, it might be that someone goes, oh, yeah, I like the services you offer, but B, I now feel like I have more a connection with you as well. So
yeah,
I often say that there's a reason why politicians are often photoed holding babies. It's because it makes them seem more real.
Mm.
So those puppy pictures, they do often go down well. you wouldn't do them all the time.
No.
But if you kind of mix them up in your news feed, you know, keeping them relevant and just a look behind the scenes on the right channel,
yeah,
they can go down brilliantly.
Yeah, I think it would be weird to ignore a massive sporting event like when the Olympics was in London, everyone was talking about it, you know, like literally you couldn't avoid it, and that was brilliant. And you know, it would have been weird if our social media at that time, whether it's professional or personal, didn't reflect that in some way. So yeah, you're quite right. So how, now this is a difficult question, sorry, but how do we go about creating engaging content? So I'm just thinking, some of our listeners probably won't even know where to start. So what would you suggest to just get started?
And you're right. This is a big question, because if you say to somebody who is particularly new to social media as well, right, go ahead and start writing some posts.
Yeah,
people kind of get writer's block,
yeah,
the equivalent of, you know, so I often call it blank pageitis. There's a blank page there, and I think I don't know how
got
to film this.
It.
What on
yeah.
earth am I going to say? So I would say, right, step away from the computer or the phone or whatever, grab your notebook and just kind of separate yourself a bit. And there are kind of different categories of things you could think about.
Okay.
So you might kind of separate your page into, you know, my products and services, my special offers, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So think about what would go in there. And then you might have another one that is questions that I'm asked. So when you said, Julia, oh, okay, I don't really understand the point of stories, and this isn't necessarily a training session for me, but if it's a question you've got in your head, there is a strong chance somebody else has got that question as well.
Okay, yeah.
If you're asked a question by a customer or a potential customer, again, you know, there's almost, there should be a post or even a blog in every day. So you know, that's kind of going off on a bit of a tangent if we talk about blogging, but you know, there will be questions you are asked on a daily basis that could become a post. So if it's I was asked today how to do X,
yeah,
this is my, you know, this is my answer, here's a photo that shows you what to look out for, or here's a link to a useful article.
Okay, yeah,
so you're solving somebody's problem.
Yeah.
So, and then you might have kind of another category for, you know, about me, fun stuff, whatever it might, you know, sort of things there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You might have did you know facts, so things that kind of, you know, get people kind of going, oh, I didn't know that. So as you know, I love a good stat.
Yeah,
so,
I do. I love all of that.
my geeky nickname, Data Davis, but I do like a good stat. I just think it helps back up thinking. So but people will respond to that. So if you put stats out there about, you know, did you know it takes X number of whatevers to do this, people will reply to that. And a bit of humour as well. So again, you need to be a bit careful about using it in the right way and pitching it right. But we all love a good meme or a good little, you know, cute video or something like that. Is there a place for that in what you're doing? If so, you know, build up a bit of a range of that.
Yes.
And in theory, you could kind of come away from your little planning session and you've got at least a couple of weeks worth of posts.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Because, you know, you really on nearly all the channels, you only need to do one or two posts a day maximum.
Right.
You know, some, so Twitter, for example, you might post more frequently, something like a LinkedIn or a Facebook once or twice a day is absolutely fine. So yeah, you've got all those sort of posts ahead of time. And you can either pre-schedule them or you've just kind of got them in a document and you know, right, I'm going to post today and this is what I'm going to say.
So the scheduling tools that are out there, I know that there's a few different ones. Does the stuff that gets put on by the scheduler tools get read equally by the algorithms? Now, I hope I'm not going too technical for our audience, but basically an algorithm is the stuff behind social media that kind of reads and rates it. Oh God, you better correct me, Amanda. I'm starting to say things that I'm not confident in. So I will let the expert tell us about algorithms and whether the scheduler's stuff is read equally as if it was done by a human.
You are right in kind of what's the algorithm. So it's the stuff in the background. So if you think about it, something like Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, they are all massive data collectors.
Mm.
And when we as a person, so without a business hat on, so if you as Julia, me as Amanda are just scrolling through our phone on Facebook or LinkedIn, mm. it doesn't necessarily just give us our posts in a kind of chronological order. It will present us with information it thinks we will engage with first.
Okay.
So because their prime goal is that you stay on their channel
yeah.
for a long time.
Yeah.
You see the advertisers and you hang out there. So they want to send give you stuff they think is engaging. So it starts to learn. There's all this kind of, you know, things in the background that it learns that, okay, well, you engage with these posts quite a lot, I'm going to show you those.
Mm-hmm.
I know these people are your family because, you know, particularly on Facebook, we've told it in someone we set up
yes.
our profile, we've said, so it will show you those. So your job when you're posting is you're kind of doing it for two reasons. One is for your audience,
mm-hmm.
but the other is for the algorithm.
Okay.
So you want LinkedIn to respond to it. So that's why people put hashtags in their posts.
Yes.
So if someone goes kind of, what's a hashtag? It's partially there so that it gets indexed and it tells the platform specifically, this is what I'm writing about.
Mm.
So for me, I often would kind of do my post, pop the hashtags at the bottom that might be hashtag social media, hashtag marketing, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So yes, so that's the reason you're kind of, you're writing for the algorithm
yes.
as well. As I was saying, it's almost like dropping a little pebble in the water as well. So if you put a post in or post up and a few people like it,
yeah,
the platform wakes up and goes, oh, okay, in that case I'm going to show it to a few more people.
Yeah.
And because they've liked it, somebody in their network, so it might be that it's not someone I'm connected to, but because you, Julia, have liked the post,
mm.
it kind of shows me Julia's liked this, so it's partially showing me kind of what you're up to, but equally it might be something that's of interest to me as well.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's almost like, I was going to say we're all spying on each other through these platforms, but I don't want to be that alarmist, because actually we all control what we put out on our social media. So, you know, and to be honest, we're a bit naive if we think there won't be a certain amount of stuff done with what we post.
Yeah.
You touched on hashtags actually. So I imagine one of the questions you get asked is, what is a hashtag? And how do we start with hashtags, actually? And, you know, I'm sure I've seen information about, well, you should only have no more than however many on a post. I mean, is any of this stuff true, or is it all just put out there to be mystical about the whole thing?
Some kind of magical language
yeah.
that only a very, very few understand.
Yeah.
There is different guidance on hashtags, depending on the platform that you're on. As I say, they are phrases that are searchable.
Mm-hmm.
So if I wanted to go in and... So Twitter is a great example, for example. So if, and we've talked about sporting events.
Mm.
So if I wanted to search for people who are posting about... Six Nations,
yep,
for example,
yep,
I would just type
yep.
in hashtag Six Nations. Yeah, again, if there's like a big TV thing going on, so, you know, what's everybody watching at the moment? I'm not really sure. What is everybody watching at the moment?
I don't know.
It was Game of Thrones a couple
yeah,
of years ago.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
It was a Game of Thrones. So hashtag Game of Thrones. So you can kind of join in a conversation about it and see kind of what the sentiment is
mm.
about kind of, you know, what the conversation is. So it makes it nice and searchable.
Yeah.
Equally, so those are kind of very the fluffier side of it.
Mm.
From a worky point of view, if you want to kind of do hashtag search for Hampshire, Southampton, London, it might bring up
mm.
specific conversations for that.
Yeah.
The guidance does vary. So LinkedIn is important for hashtags because, again, LinkedIn actually is a search engine. Every post you put out on LinkedIn is indexed.
Right.
And you'll often see, so you can, the first three hashtags are the most important on LinkedIn, because that's the bit that LinkedIn takes and goes, right, this is what you're talking about. And the if somebody copied and pasted the link to that post,
mm.
so if you wanted to go, oh, I've seen this post, it's really interesting. You should read this, Julia, it's really interesting.
Mm.
So I took the link to it. It would kind of say linkedin.com/Julia, blah, blah,
yeah.
blah. And then it would say something like social media dash digital marketing dash. So it's starting
okay.
to learn. So the first, so you can use more, It will pick up on more. So you also kind of need to think about the aesthetics. So, what it looks like. Obviously, if you've got one sentence post with like 9 or 10 hashtags, it looks kind of daft and
Starts to look false.
It won't get much interaction. Yeah. So the first three are the most important on LinkedIn. Instagram, you can use heaps and heaps. So, 9, 10, 11, it's... And one kind of time-saving piece of advice we often use is if you're using Instagram on your phone, just on your notepad or something like that, save like a list of all your hashtags.
Okay.
So when you put your post out, all you need to do is just copy-paste and chuck them in there. You don't have to retype.
That is a great... business, yeah.
Hashtag small bit, because it takes forever.
That's a great top tip. And actually, I've just remembered the question that I'm not sure we answered was whether the schedulers for social media, whether what they post is equally well read by that social media channel as if it was done by you, the human, at that time. So I guess the social media channels know that it's been posted by Hootsuite or whatever the scheduler is.
And again, that's a fantastic question. Scheduling tools they're so useful. Mm. Let's face it, because we don't all have time to be sat in front of a computer all day long. Facebook, you can actually pre-schedule posts for your page within Facebook.
Okay.
So I would recommend doing that, because Facebook is a bit, they do not penalize you as such, but they prefer you to act natively. So if you're uploading video images, so you can't do it on personal feeds, but on your page, so your company page, you can type your post, you can schedule it for any time in advance. Mm. And you know, they've got lots of kind of insights in there as well. So you can actually start to see what times of day your audience is online, which posts perform better. And again, you can adapt your strategy to that. So when I'm looking at Facebook, I always post natively in there. So LinkedIn, I think, again, if you can try and do it natively, but actually, you've got to get the balance sometimes between convenience and, sort of getting the best return. So, if you're putting out good content, it will get the engagement anyway.
Yes, and I think also part of the problem is that not everyone is available. So there's a lot of stuff, I think, where if you post on social media at lunchtime, you're more likely that people will read it. I don't know if that's changed actually since people are working from home. But when people were working in offices, I guess lunchtime was when they'd think, oh, well, what's going on in the world?
You are right. There are good times to post on social media. Now, naturally, it kind of depends which sector you're in and who you're talking to. So, the research is often done in a fairly generic way. It's if you put posts out at this time, it tends to get more traction. And it has changed over the last 12 months. So as you say, for LinkedIn in particular, that always got a lot of engagement on the commute time. So I guess if people were perhaps on public transport, obviously not if they're driving, but they would often in the morning, you're on the train, you can picture it scrolling through your phone, just checking in on what everyone's doing, the news of the day.
Mm.
People far less now. We're not commuting. We're nearly all working from home. Mm. So what would have been kind of between 7 and 9 a.m. is a great time to post. It's still a good time to post on LinkedIn, but that shifted as well. So, and fairly generally, but across nearly all channels, 11, what I call the kind of coffee break, tea break time.
Okay.
So is a good time to post, because first thing in the morning, everyone's kind of logging on, just checking their emails, what's happened that I need to crack on with the day, possibly dealing with homeschooling as well. So it's all a bit frantic first thing.
Yeah.
By the time we get to sort of mid to late morning towards lunchtime, I'm going to pause for breath. I might just scroll through my phone and see what's happening while the kettle's boiling. So that's a really good time to get engagement. Okay. Facebook and Instagram, evenings are a good time to post, because they're kind of sort of less formal, less worky.
Yeah.
So again, it's that sort of potential, what we call mindless scrolling. But if you've got really good posts that you can put out there, people will engage with those as well.
We all do this mindless scrolling. Why I've not heard it called that. But yeah, next time I catch my husband, I'm going to say you're mindless scrolling. But catch yourself doing it and you think, there's 20 minutes gone. I've done nothing.
Yeah, it is. It is a time vampire. And there was another phrase that I heard recently called doom scrolling. So this is particularly for Twitter, where you just feel like you're scrolling, looking for more. Oh, what's happened now? What's happened now? So people were kind of putting posts like going, like, stop. This is your kind of timeline interrupter to say, stop doom scrolling. Go and do something useful. Go and make a cup of tea. Go and find a video of a panda playing in the snow, whatever it might be. Not good for your mental health.
exactly. We do need to keep an eye on ourselves, don't we? So just thinking, if people are really time poor, so thinking that our audience is likely to be self-employed people who are just starting or thinking of starting, and so obviously there's a million and one things to do when you set up your business. So if someone is juggling a lot, but they do want to start in this social media world, because obviously without that they're lessening their chances of their own, of promoting their business. So if they don't have a lot of time, what one thing or couple of things do you think someone new to this should prioritize? And again, that's a massive question. So good luck.
It is a big question, but I think, you know, working with social media for, you know, however many years, you kind of learn. And as you said, you know, as we've just said, you can just lose hours from scrolling, from just looking at something. So you need to be quite disciplined. I would say the best piece of advice I could give is to plan your content in advance, even if you're not necessarily scheduling it, but it just means that it's there, it's done. You almost don't need to think about it. You can use a scheduler or schedule natively, or you can, you know, you've got it there in a Word document and you kind of think, right, I'm just going to do this post before I go. So plan your content in advance, because it's kind of a job that's done. Then you just, you know, you can then focus on what you need to do. And all you need to then pick up on are perhaps the notifications where people have hopefully liked, commented or engaged with what you've put out there. So that's all you need to think about. So set aside some time to plan your content. And then when you do go online, you know, even to the point where you set a timer, you think, right, I'm literally just going to spend and half an hour, 30 minutes, you know, half an hour, whatever it might be, doing some business development. And you need to kind of frame it in your mind as that as well. So I'm online because I'm doing business development or I'm doing marketing. I'm not just kind of looking for, you know, at home workouts or anything like that, because it's very easy to kind of go, oh, shiny, what's over here?
And as soon as you call it business development, I noticed even myself then, I sort of thought, yes, it's really important. Whereas social media, you call it social media, it sounds fluffy and extra, but business development is core. So you're quite right. And I like the idea of setting a timer as well, because, it is too easy to get distracted. Well, I think that probably covers most things. I think we've gone through a lot. I think our audience should have got a huge amount out of it. I've got loads out of it. So thanks for the for the free training and consultancy and advice.
My pleasure. Glad to help.
Yeah. Perhaps we should do one of these a week. No, I'm kidding. just so I can get free advice. That's not on. But what we will do is put your contact details with the show notes for this. So if anyone does actually want to kind of engage with you on social media or kind of get you in to do a more detailed overview with them on social media, then obviously I'm sure you're able to do that as and when. So I will put all that information on there, and thank you so much. And to our listeners, I do recommend getting Data Davies. Is it monthly? Tell us actually about that, just to finish off.
It is monthly, so it's part of what we call our social snippet at Green Umbrella. So it's kind of all the latest news and changes that are happening in the world of social media. But my part in particular is kind of stats and things that A, I find interesting, B, but help you kind of make more informed decisions. I must also say there is a fantastic resource on the Green Umbrella website, which is 75 ideas of things to post on social media. So if you're looking,
75. Wow, I'm going straight to that. I will put a link to the on the show notes.
It's great. So again, if you're suffering from that writer's block, you think, I don't know what to post, it's a great place to get some inspiration.
Brilliant. All right, lovely. Well, I will make sure that our listeners have access to that. And thank you so much for your time. I've really enjoyed chatting. And it's nice to demystify social media a bit, isn't it?
My absolute pleasure. It's been great to be on.
Thank you for listening to All About Self-Employment, hosted by Julia Kermode. For more information on today's discussion, please visit iwork.co.uk, where you can also join our growing community. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, then we would love you to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. We'll be back at the same time next week.